Welcome to this podcast on the evolution of the RF front end. I'm Pat Hindle, and I'm here with my co-host, Gary LaRude. The smartphone RF front end has dramatically evolved over the last decade, moving from a discrete amplifier and controller module to a complex module with duplexers and filters, switches, controllers, and amplifiers that have to consider more than 1,000 frequency band combinations, which is expected to grow to more than 10,000 with 5G. With the power amplifier used to take up the bulk of the space, it's now dominated by filtering and switching to support all these bands. To discuss this evolution of the RF front end, we are here today with Christian Block, Vice President and General Manager of the RF front end business at Qualcomm. Welcome, Christian.
Hello.
No better person to talk to you. Qualcomm has really taken a big market share in the RF front end market this year. So what is causing the proliferation of the frequency bands and the higher performance requirements of the RF front end today?
Yeah, what we see is 5G is really now taking off, and it's taking globally off. And we see more and more that is building on the 4G legacy. And we see that this globalization and required increase of data is, first of all, getting more and more bands, as you say. So hundreds of filters, filter bands or frequency bands coming. And then more and more aggregate these bands in several regions. And that makes it really growing broader. The number of frequency bands are coming. On top of that, in 4G, we were more in the area of up to 3 gigahertz with the sub-6 frequencies. In 5G, we are now moving up to 6 gigahertz. On top of that, we have the new Wi-Fi where we need coexistence. And beyond that, as we know, is now also, especially in the U.S., already very prominent, but also in Asia growing, is a millimeter wave. So that's really the thing growing and going broader, the frequencies going there, and the higher performance requirements for the RF front end come really that you have to really look for coexistence of different bands and different frequencies and also different systems, Wi-Fi, cellular, 4G, 5G, all these combinations.
So if you talk about the increasing number of frequency bands and the added complexity of carrier aggregation and dual connectivity, how are these adding to the requirements for the duplexers and other filters in the front end?
Yeah, first of all, the increased frequency bands require more technologies. So in the past, we had frequencies in the lower band frequencies, which were mostly done with SAW filter technologies. Standard filter technologies like simple lithium tantalate-based standard SAW filter could be used, and it was only a few bands. Over time, also moving to 4G LTE, more and more bands came into the picture, and with the coexistence, having many filters and bands beside each other, the filter requirements were getting more and more harsh. This caused then that you were going to temperature-compensated acoustic filter technologies, and also in the middle frequencies, BAW technologies or FBAR technologies are showing up for getting better performance. Now with the move into the sub-6 and 5G area, the bandwidth going bigger, so the filter requirements are there, but the coexistence is also there. And last but not least, with the millimeter wave, you have also to take care on frequencies in the 30 gigahertz. So the complexity is going more and more higher, more and more bands need more sharper skirts of the filter bands. And insertion loss is still key because you want to have low battery, so current consumption, and you want to be absolutely sure that there is no interference and the coexistence is not causing any issues. This causes that you have little more filter requirements. The technologies have to be upgraded, and this performance also now looking for new technologies, and that's critical.
So given all these challenges to filtering, how are acoustic wave filters improving their performance?
The acoustic filter really improves the performance. First of all, insertion loss is a key item. So it goes directly into the battery life. It goes directly in the whole system. So that's important. The acoustic coexistence features, so having steep skirts, having high filtering is also increasing the performance. This makes it possible that you can really carry frequencies in, for example, low band, or mid band, high band in a different way. And that's critical. So the acoustic filters are really filters which are giving you steep skirts and low insertion loss. And very important, not talking only about electrical performance, it's also a size issue. So it's very important that you have very, very small size that you can really place them into the complete RF frontend of a global phone. That makes it really critical.
So tell us some about the filter technologies that you are offering for your front-end modules and why you chose those technologies.
Yeah, we are using pretty broadly all acoustic technologies. It's clear the reason for that is we have not been picking up certain areas in the frequency band, so that we are focusing only on the mid-high band, as some competitors are doing. We are really addressing the entire frequency spectrum because we want to really show a full end-to-end solution from modem to antenna and want to ensure that we have all filter frequencies available. If you then look into what filters we are using, what kind of technology we're using, usually we are using in the lower frequencies, we are using TC SAW filters currently, but also moving then in the future also to our new advanced QSAW. I will talk there in a minute. Then in the mid-high frequencies, we are using usually BAW technologies, bulk acoustic wave technologies, very similar to the to FBAR, which is just a different approach, but very similar from base technologies. But also here, we have been introducing half a year ago our QSAW, so our latest technology, so the kind of thin film SAW technology. I could say it's a combination or something in the between surface acoustic wave filter and a BAW filter. And this gives a different performance. And we have been choosing that in a way that we always look what gives us the best performance, especially in low insertion loss. But also, and that's critical, why are we going more and more to these QSAW technologies? We see the opportunity that we can put many filter functions into one die, and even we can stack that. And that helps us to make the size very smart, so we can reduce the size of these filter functions far more, and that helps us to make an even more smart routing in the front end, and reduces the size of the front end. So that's what we are doing in higher frequencies, especially in the 5 GHz. We're also using standard passive technologies like ceramic filtering or making embedded structures. So it's really depending what kind of filter characteristics are necessary.
So moving to switching, how has the switch technology changed over the years, and what are some of the main performance demands on them today?
Yeah, many, many years ago, looking to the early years of 4G, that was a time where you were even using from time to time gas PM switches. But now where you need more and more complex, have more and more complexity, you have up to 10 throws in one switch. You are having switches for the diversity modules, you have switches for the TX modules. So the complexity has been increasing. This has been moving all into RF SOI or SOI technologies away from gallium arsenide PM structures. You have the control functions in embedded. You have the capability to really optimize that, and especially you have the size. So the key was that in the switch technology moving ahead there. Very important is that you have been playing with the technology itself, so really improving the loss mechanism and also the switch mechanisms, the high isolation, fast switching, low current consumption, all the things. And this has been evolving all the time. So this, many, many years ago, it was gallium arsenide, but meanwhile, it's all silicon-based switch technologies. And here also, again, it's very important that is that they are tiny and very cost-efficient.
Looking at the power amplifier, the GaAs HBT has been really the workhorse for cellular power amplifiers over several generations now, withstanding attempts by silicon to displace it. Do you see GaAs HBT remaining the preferred PA technology in 5G?
Yeah, my observation has been always when there are new technologies coming and are extending, like, for example, there is examples where SiG makes a lot of sense. The old technologies are fighting back. And what I see is, if I see especially in the gallium arsenide, the technology has been evolving further. And also with the new requirements, higher gain and also bigger bandwidth, higher efficiency, and then also seeing that this technology has been evolving also in going to smaller die size and so on. The situation is that gallium arsenide HBT has been fighting back. So the leading foundries and also other gallium arsenide manufacturers have been improving this technology further on. So especially for the sub-6 area, I see gallium arsenide can still survive, and in lower frequencies, it is still there, and I don't see that this will be replaced shortly. Nevertheless, new technologies like SiGe are there, and they are, in a way, available to be used for such future devices, and therefore, I see it a coexistence of the different PA technologies. But it's good that there's technology competition also here, and therefore I don't see a situation where there is a harsh replacement of one technology by the other.
Do you see any alternative amplifier technologies, you know, far down the road? Do you ever see like gallium nitride ever making it into the RF front end for mobile devices?
Yeah, I think it's at least at the horizon. I don't see that short term. I see gallium nitride making its way first in the infrastructure, and there's a lot of growth opportunities also in the 5G space. So this is what we see here, especially if it comes to high power applications. That makes a lot of sense to consider that. But as I said before, this gallium arsenide has a scale, has a performance, and fighting back. Yes, it will come, but it will take time. It is not coming overnight.
We all want our phones to last a long time between battery recharging. So obviously power management is kind of behind the scenes, and it's evolved over a number of generations as the phone has become more complex. What would you say are the main challenges today for power management?
Yeah, first of all, the challenges come really from what the devices look for. And first of all, what do we have is thinner phone designs. So more powerful modems coming. And this is also goes with the need for increased power efficiency and the need also for more efficient power tracking. So that is coming. On top of that, and I talked about that a bit earlier, we see the larger number of band combinations, the more complexity in the phone and antenna design. And this causes also going with the increase in search loss. And that, again, need for higher output power. And higher output current requires from the power management. So it's very critical that the power management for saving power and managing that is there. And there is more content in the phones. The footprint becomes also critical. So also how to reduce that. Similar like I talked with on the filters, we have the same challenge also in the power management. So we have to look on an architectural enhancement and packaging technologies. And this goes into special zip technologies, wafer level packaging technologies, chip and substrate, and that always usually combined also that you have certain power inductors which are also not small. So that's the bigger challenge. And then last but not least, thinking about 5G, we see increase in the channel bandwidth going to 100 megahertz. Envelope tracking get challenges were resolved and demonstrated. So we have that. So we could show that in the 2020 launches. But we see further continuation of evolvement and also improvement. So we see power management is by far not what it has been. So the move into ET and having all the savings in current and efficiency are so critical, so that there has been a lot of change over the years.
So we've seen several phone models for 5G this year add millimeter wave to their capabilities. You know, what are the main challenges for millimeter wave modules, and how is Qualcomm addressing those?
Yeah, we're helping our customers here. The number one challenge is clearly how to place the modules. It's a question of the industrial design, how to ensure that there is a good connection between the millimeter wave modules. You usually go with 2 up to 4 modules in a phone. So really to place them correctly, how to manage that, that there is a good propagation of the waves. That's very critical. And we are addressing that by supporting the customers, especially customers who are new to millimeter wave. Qualcomm has an experience of many, many years on that and helping on that. And that's what we are doing. Is for sure it's also a logistical challenge here to do that. But meanwhile, we are in a very good situation here, have been working with many customers. They are used now to use millimeter wave technologies. And we see with this, we have a momentum here that this can grow.
As you've noted, there's been an incredible increase in complexity in the RF front end over the years. What capabilities are required to remain a competitive front end supplier in the 5G era?
So for us, it's important. We are not only a component guy who is doing RF front end components. So for us, it's very important that we take more and more advantage, especially in Qualcomm, that we have this end-to-end capability. So that we have the capability from modem to antenna, and that we can drive performance by combining this asset. So we are working very closely on that. Very important with this high complexity. Still, you want to have short cycle times to launch new phones. And that's critical that we keep this advantage, that we bring more and more advantages to the customers who really feel that that data connection, low current consumption, and all the services are seamless available. So that's critical for us to keep that momentum. Very important is that I talked about a lot of elements now, like the filters, like power management and other areas and power amplifiers. Important is that in every area, in every component area, we must be leading. For sure, we have then to orchestrate that to an end-to-end solution, but critical, and we have to be positively paranoid about that, that every single component in the front end, we want to be leading in the industry here and want to be very competitive. Losing out in one area would be messy and would take away advantages of our end-to-end solution. That's critical.
So what future changes do you see for the RF front end with the 5G rollouts and even release 17 down the road?
Yeah, there's a lot of things happening there. What I was thinking here, what is new things? I think there's more and more millimeter wave bands coming. That's important to notice. So this today we have one band usually, and it's more and more coming. So what I expect that we have a similar story as we had in the sub-6 area, combining different bands, optimizing that, then also understanding the coexistence even with the harmonics of the lower frequencies to handle that through the whole phone. That is what I see really coming here down the road, and which is giving further challenges and complexity. And that is good news for Qualcomm, because we like the challenges and we like the complexity.
Christian, this was a fascinating conversation, and we appreciate you sharing your perspective with us and our listeners. The RF front end is clearly a dynamic landscape, and the more integrated in the phone it becomes, the harder it is to discern what's happening. So we appreciate your insight.
Patrick, Gary, so thank you so much to have the opportunity to talk to the Microwave Journal here. That's very important to me that we had such a talk and that I could share also my thoughts on that. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. And a final note before we end, Microwave Journal will be hosting a webinar panel discussion on the RF front end, which is scheduled for January 21st. We plan to have an engaging discussion of the technology options for current and future RF front ends. So note that date on your calendar and watch for more information from us about registering. And thanks, everyone, for listening today.